Chapter 70. That God knows trivial things. This being established, we must show that God knows trivial things and that this is not inconsistent with the nobility of his knowledge. For the stronger an active power is, the further does its action extend, as appears even in the action of sensible things. Now the force of the divine intellect in knowing things is likened to an active power, since the divine intellect knows, not by receiving from things, but rather by pouring itself into them. Since, then, it is of infinite power in understanding, as shown above, it follows that its knowledge extends to the most remote things. Now the degrees of nobility and meanness in all beings depend on nearness to and distance from God, who is in the summit of nobility. Therefore God, on account of the exceeding power of his intellect, knows things even though they be in the last degree trivial. Further, whatever is, for as much as it exists, or is such, is actual, and a likeness of the first act, and for this reason has nobility. Again, whatever is in potentiality, has a share of nobility through its being ordained to actuality, for so is it set to be. It follows, therefore, that everything, considered in itself, is noble, but is set to be mean in comparison with that which is more noble. Now the noblest of things other than God are no less distant from him than the lowest creatures are from the highest. If, therefore, this latter distance hindered God's knowledge, much more would the former, and thus it would follow that God knows nothing other than himself, which has been disproved above. If, therefore, he knows something other than himself, however most noble it may be, for the same reason he knows everything, no matter how mean we call it. Moreover, the good of the order in the universe is more noble than any part of the universe, because each part is directed to the good of the order in the whole, as to its end, as the philosopher states in 11 Metaphysics. If then God knows some other noble nature, most of all must he know the order of the universe. But this cannot be known unless both noble and mean things be known, because the order of the universe consists in their mutual distances and relationships. It follows therefore that God knows not only noble things, but also those that are deemed trivial. Further, the meanness of things known does not of itself reflect on the knower, for it belongs to the nature of knowledge that the knower contains the species of the things he knows, according to his mode. And yet the meanness of things known may reflect accidentally on the knower, either because while considering mean things he is withdrawn from the thought of noble things, or because through considering mean things he is inclined to certain undue affections. But this cannot take place in God, as appears from what has been said. Therefore the knowledge of trivial things is not derogatory to the nobility of God, rather does it belong to his perfection. For as much as he prepossesses all things in himself, as we have shown above. Again, a power is accounted little, not through being capable of little things, but through being confined to little results, since a power that is capable of great things is also capable of little ones. Accordingly, knowledge that comprises both noble and trivial things is not to be accounted trivial, but only that which comprises none but trivial things, as happens with us, for our thoughts of divine things are distinct from our thoughts of human things, and of each we have a distinct knowledge. Wherefore in comparison with the more noble, the less noble is accounted mean. But it is not thus in God, because he considers all things with the same thought and knowledge. Therefore no meanness is to be ascribed to his knowledge, on account of his knowing any mean things whatever. In accord with this is the saying of Wisdom 7:24-25 about divine wisdom, that she reacheth everywhere by reason of her purity, and no defiled thing cometh into her. It is clear from what has been said that the argument put forward in opposition is not subversive of the truth we have demonstrated. For the nobility of a science depends on the principal object of that science, and not on whatever may come under that science, because with us not only the highest but also the lowest beings come under the most noble of sciences. For the treatise of metaphysics extends from the first being to potential being, which is the lowest of all beings. Thus then the divine knowledge comprises the lowest beings, as being known at the same time with the object known principally. For the divine essence is the principal object of God's knowledge, and in it he knows all things, as we have shown above. It is also evident that this truth is not in contradiction with the statements of the philosopher in 11 Metaphysics. For there he intends to prove that the divine intellect knows not something other than himself, that is a perfection of his intellect as the principal object of its knowledge. And in this sense he states that it is better not to know mean things than to know them when, that is, knowledge of trivial things is distinct from the knowledge of noble things, and the thought of mean things is an obstacle to the thought of noble things. Chapter 71. That God knows evil things. It remains now to be proved that God knows evil things. For if a good be known, the opposite evil is known. Now God knows all the particular goods to which evils are opposed. Therefore God knows evil things. Further, the notions of contraries in the mind are not opposed to one another, else they would not be together in the mind, nor would they be known at the same time. Therefore the aspect under which we know evil is not repugnant to good. Rather is it connected with the idea of good. Accordingly if, as we have proved above, all the aspects of goodness are to be found in God, by reason of his absolute perfection, it follows that in him is the notion by which evil is known. Therefore he knows evils also. Again, the true is the good of the intellect, for an intellect is said to be good for as much as it knows the true. Now it is not only true that good is good, but also that evil is evil, for just as it is true that what is, so is it true that what is not. Hence the good of the intellect consists even in the knowledge of evil. But, since the divine intellect is perfect in goodness, it cannot possibly lack any intellectual perfection. Therefore it has the knowledge of evils. Moreover, God knows the distinction between things, as shown above. Now the notion of distinction includes negation. For when things are distinct, the one is not the other. Hence primaries which are distinguished by themselves, include mutual negation of one the another, and for this reason negative propositions about them are self-evident. For instance, no quantity is a substance. Therefore God knows negation. Now privation is negation in a definite subject, as is proved in 4 Metaphysics. Therefore he knows privation, and consequently evil, which is nothing else than the privation of due perfection. Further, if God knows all the species of things, as was proved above, and as granted and proved even by some philosophers, it follows that he knows contraries, both because the species of certain genera are contrary, and because the differences of genera are contrary, as stated in 10 Metaphysics. Now contraries include opposition of form and of privation, according to the same authority. Therefore it follows that God knows privation and, consequently, evil. Again, God knows not only form but also matter, as was proved above. Now matter, since it is being in potentiality, cannot be known perfectly, unless it be known to what its potentiality extends, and this applies to all kinds of power. But the potentiality of matter extends to both form and privation, for that which can be, can also not be. Therefore God knows privation and consequently he knows evil. Again, if God knows anything besides himself, most of all he knows that which is best, and this is the order of the universe, to which as their end all particular goods are directed. Now in the order of the universe there are certain things intended for the removal of harms that might result from certain other things, as evidenced by the means of defense with which animals are provided. Therefore God knows these harms, and thus he knows evils. Further, we are never blamed for knowing evils, as regards that which belongs essentially to knowledge, that is, as regards judgment about evil, but only accidentally. For as much as sometimes one is inclined to evil through thinking about it. But it is not so in God, for he is unchangeable, as was proved above. Nothing therefore hinders God from knowing evils. In agreement with this it is written that no evil can overcome God's wisdom, and that hell and destruction are before the Lord. Also in the Psalm, it is said, "My offenses are not hidden from thee, and for he knoweth the vanity of men, and when he seeth iniquity, Doth he not consider it? It must, however, be observed that with regard to the knowledge of evil and privation there is a difference between the divine intellect and ours. For seeing that our intellect knows each thing by its respective proper and distinct species, it knows that which is an act by an intelligible species, whereby the intellect is made actual. Hence it is able to know potentiality, inasmuch as it is sometimes in potentiality to such a species, and thus just as it knows act by means of an act, so it knows potentiality by means of potentiality. And since potentiality belongs to the notion of privation, for privation is a negation the subject whereof is a being in potentiality, it follows that it is becoming to our intellect to know privation, in some way, inasmuch as it is naturally fitted to be in potentiality, although we may also say that the mere knowledge of actuality leads to the knowledge of potentiality and privation. On the other hand, the divine intellect, which is nowise in potentiality, knows neither privation nor anything else in the above manner. For if he knew anything by a species other than himself, it would follow of necessity that he is compared to that species as potentiality to act. It follows therefore that he understands only by a species that is his essence, and consequently that he understands himself as the first object of his understanding, and yet in understanding himself he understands other things, as shown above, not only acts but potentialities and privations. This is what the philosopher means when he says, how does it know evil or black? For it knows contraries, somewhat, and it must know them by a potentiality that is in itself. But if anything there be in which the contrary is not, namely in potentiality, it knows itself, and is in act and separable. Nor is it necessary to admit the explanation of Averroes, who maintains that it follows from the above that the intellect which is pure act knows a privation not at all. But the sense is that it knows privation, not through being in potentiality to something else, but through knowing itself and being always in act. Again, it must be observed that if God knew himself in such a way that by knowing himself he knew not other beings which are particular goods, he would have no knowledge whatever of privation or evil, because there is no privation contrary to the good that is himself, since a privation and its contrary are naturally adapted to be in relation to the same thing. And so no privation, and therefore no evil, is opposed to that which is pure act. Wherefore, supposing God to know himself alone, he would not know evil through knowing the good which is himself. But, since by knowing himself he knows things in which there is a natural aptness for privations, it follows of necessity that he knows the opposite privation, and the evils contrary to particular goods. It must also be observed that, just as God by knowing himself knows other things without any discursion of his intellect, as shown above, so too there is no need for his knowledge to be discursive, if he knows evil through good. For good is the ratio as it were of the knowledge of evil, so that evil is known through good, as a thing through its definition, and not as conclusions through their premises. Nor does it argue imperfection in the divine knowledge if God knows evil through the privation of good, because evil does not indicate being except in so far as it is a privation of good. Wherefore in this way alone is it knowable, since a thing is so far knowable as it has being. Chapter 72. That in God there is will. After discussing the matters concerning the knowledge of the divine intellect, it remains for us to consider the divine will. For from the fact that there is intelligence in God, it follows that in him there is will. Because, since the good understood is the proper object of the will, it follows that the good understood, as such, is willed. Now understood indicates a reference to one who understands. It follows therefore of necessity that one who understands good, as such, has a will. Now God understands good, for since he is perfectly intelligent, as shown above, he understands being simultaneously with the notion of good. Therefore in him there is will. Again, whatever has a form, is thereby related to things actually existing. Thus white timber by its whiteness is like some things and unlike others. Now in intelligent and sentient subjects there is the form of the thing understood and sensed, Because all knowledge is through some likeness, therefore there must be a relation in the intelligent or sentient subject to the things understood or sensed according as the latter actually exist. Now this is not due to the fact that they understand or sense, because in this respect rather is there a relation in things to the intelligent or sentient subject, since intelligence and sensation depend on things being in the intellect and sense, according to the respective modes of each. But the sentient and the intelligent subject have by the will and appetite a relation to things outside the mind. Wherefore every sentient and intelligent subject has an appetite and will, although properly speaking, will is in an intellect. Since then God is intelligent, it follows that he has a will. Moreover, that which is consequent upon every being, belongs to being as such, and a thing of this kind must needs be found especially in that which is the first being. Now it is competent to every being to desire its own perfection and the preservation of its being, and to each one this is competent according to its mode, to intelligent beings by will, to animals by sensitive appetite, to those that are devoid of sense by natural appetite, to those however who have it otherwise than to those who have it not. For those who have it not, by the appetitive power of their genus tend with desire to acquire what is lacking to them, whereas those who have it are at rest therein. Wherefore this cannot be lacking to the first being, which is God. Since, then, he is intelligent, there is will in him, whereby his being and his goodness are pleasing to him. Again, the more perfect the act of understanding is, the more delightful is it to the one who understands. Now God understands, and his act of understanding is most perfect, as was proved above. To understand is to him most delightful, but intellectual delight is by the will, even as sensitive delight is by the appetite of concupiscence. Therefore there is will in God. Further, a form considered by the intellect neither moves nor causes anything except through the medium of the will, whose object is an end and a good by which one is moved to act. Wherefore the speculative intellect does not move, nor does the soul imagination without the estimative power. Now the form of the divine intellect is the cause of being and movement in other things, for God moves things by his intellect, as we shall prove further on. Therefore it follows that he has a will. Again, the first of motive powers in intelligent beings is the will, because the will applies every power to its act. For we understand because we will, we imagine because we will, and so forth. And the will has this because its object is the end, although the intellect, not by way of efficient and moving cause, but by way of final cause, moves the will, by putting its object before it, which object is the end. Therefore it is especially fitting that the first mover should have a will. Further, the free is that which is its own cause, and so the free has the aspect of that which is of itself. Now liberty of action is seated primarily in the will, for in so far as one acts voluntarily, one is set to perform any action whatever freely. Therefore it is especially fitting that the first agent should act by will, since to him it is most competent to act of himself. Moreover, the end and the agent intending the end are always of the same order in things, wherefore the proximate end which is proportionate to the agent, is of the same species as the agent, in works both of nature and of art. For the form of the art whereby the craftsman works is the species of the form that is in matter, and is the end of the craftsman, and the form of the generating fire, whereby the fire acts, is of the same species as the form of the fire generated, which form is the end of the generation. Now nothing is company ordinate with God as though it were of the same order, except God himself, otherwise there would be several first beings, and we have shown the contrary to be the case. He is therefore the first agent intending an end which is himself. Therefore he not only is a desirable end, but also desires himself, so to speak, as an end, and, since he is intelligent, he desires himself by intellectual appetite, and this is will. Therefore in God there is will. Holy Writ bears witness to this will of God. For it is said in the Psalm, "Whatsoever the Lord willed, he hath done, and who resisteth his will?" Chapter 73. That God's will is his essence. It is evident from the foregoing that his will is not distinct from his essence, for it belongs to God to have a will inasmuch as he has an intellect, as proved above. Now he is intelligent by his essence, as we have already shown, and consequently will also is in him by his essence. Therefore God's will is his very essence. Again, even as to understand is the perfection of one who is intelligent, so to will is the perfection of one who wills, for each is an action abiding in the agent, and not passing into something passive, as heating. Now God's act of intelligence is his being, as we proved above, because, since God's being is by itself supremely perfect, it admits of no additional perfection, as we have shown above. Therefore the divine willing is also his being, and consequently God's will is his essence. Moreover, since every agent acts in so far as it is actual, it follows that God, who is pure act, acts by his essence. Now willing is an operation of God. Therefore it follows that God wills by his essence. Therefore his will is his essence. Again, if will were something added to the divine substance, since the divine substance is complete in being, it would follow that will would be adventitious to him like an accident to its subject, that the divine substance would be compared thereto as potentiality to act, and that there is composition in God, all of which have been disproved above. It is therefore impossible for the divine will to be something in addition to the divine essence. Chapter 74. That the principal object of God's will is the divine essence. It is also evident from the foregoing that the principal object of God's will is his essence, for the good understood is the object of the will, as proved above. Now the principal object of God's intellect is the divine essence, as we have already proved. Therefore the divine essence is the principal object of the divine will. Again, the appetible object is compared to the appetite as mover to the thing moved, as we have stated above. It is the same with the thing willed in relation to the will, since the will belongs to the genus of appetitive powers. Wherefore if something besides God's essence were the principal object of God's will, it would follow that something else is superior to, and moves the divine will, and the contrary of this was proved above. Further, the principal thing willed is to every will the cause of his willing, for when we say I wish to walk that I may be healed, we consider that we are stating the reason. And if it be asked, why do you wish to be healed? We shall continue to give reasons until we come to the last end, which is the principal thing willed, and is of itself the cause of willing. Accordingly if God wills principally something other than himself, it follows that something other than himself is the cause of his willing. But his willing is his being, as we have shown. Therefore something else will be the cause of his being, and this is contrary to the notion of the first being. Again, to every will a thing willed principally is his last end, because the end is willed by reason of itself, and other things come to be willed by reason of it. Now God is the last end, because he is the sovereign good, as was proved. Therefore he is the principal object of his will. Moreover, every power is proportionate to its principal object according to equality, for the power of a thing is measured according to its object, as the philosopher says. Therefore the will is proportionate according to equality to its principal object, as well as the intellect and the senses. Now nothing is proportionate according to equality to God's will, except his essence. Therefore the principal object of the divine will is the divine essence. And since the divine essence is God's act of understanding and whatsoever else is said to be in God, it is also clear that in the same way God wills principally, to will, to understand, to be one, and so forth. Chapter 75. That God in willing himself wills also other things. Hence it may be proved that in willing himself he wills other things also, for he who wills the end principally, wills the means to the end for the sake of that end. Now God himself is the last end of things, as appears sufficiently from what we have said. From the fact therefore that he wills himself to be, he wills also other things, that are directed to himself as their end. Again, everything desires the perfection of that which it wills and loves for its own sake, because whatever we love for its own sake, we wish to be best, and ever to be bettered and multiplied as much as possible. Now God wills and loves his essence for its own sake, and it cannot be increased or multiplied in itself, as appears from what has been said, and can only be multiplied in respect of its likeness, which is shared by many. Therefore God wishes things to be multiplied, because he wills and loves his essence and perfection. Moreover, whosoever loves a thing in itself and for its own sake, loves in consequence all the things wherein it is found. Thus he who loves sweetness for its own sake, must needs love all sweet things. Now God wills and loves his own being, in itself and for its own sake, as we have proved above. And all other being is a participation, by likeness, of his being, as was made sufficiently clear by what we have said above. Therefore, from the very fact that God wills and loves himself, it follows that he wills and loves other things. Again, God, in willing himself, wills all things that are in him. Now all things pre-exist in him somewhat by their proper types, as we have proved. Therefore in willing himself, God wills other things. Again, as stated above, the greater a thing's power, to so many more things, and to the greater distance does its casualty extend. Now the casualty of an end consists in other things being desired for its sake. Wherefore the more perfect and the more willed an end is, to so many more things does the will of him who wills that end extend by reason of that end. But the divine essence is most perfect considered under the aspect of goodness and end. Therefore it will extend its casualty most of all to many things, so that many be willed for its sake, especially by God, who wills it perfectly with all his might. Further, will is consequent upon intellect. Now God by his intellect understands himself principally, and other things in himself. Therefore in like manner he wills himself principally, and in willing himself, he wills all else. This is confirmed by the authority of Holy Writ, for it is written, "For thou lovest all things that are, and hatest none of the things which thou hast made." Chapter 76. That God, by the one act of his will, wills himself and other things. This being proved, it follows that God, by one act of his wills himself and other things. For every power tends by one operation or act to its object and the formal aspect of that object, even as by the one sight we see light and color made visible by light. Now when we will something solely for the sake of an end, that which is desired for the sake of the end takes its aspect of thing willed from the end, and thus the end is compared to it as the formal aspect to an object, as light to color. Since, then, God wills all things for his own sake as for the sake of an end, as we have proved, he wills himself and other things by one act of his will. Moreover, that which is perfectly known and desired is known and desired with respect to its whole virtue. Now the virtue of an end consists not only in its being desired for its own sake, but also in other things being made desirable for its sake. Wherefore he that desires an end perfectly, desires it in both these ways. But it cannot be admitted that God has an act whereby he wills himself without willing himself perfectly, since in him there is nothing imperfect. By every act in which God wills himself absolutely, and other things for his own sake. And he wills not things other than himself, except because he wills himself, as was proved above. It follows therefore that not by distinct acts but by one and the same act he wills himself and other things. Again, as appears from what has been said, discursion in the act of the cognitive faculty occurs when we know the premises apart from the conclusions, and draw the conclusions from them. For if we were to see the conclusions in the premises themselves, simply through knowing the premises, there would be no discursion, as neither is there when we see something reflected in a mirror. Now just as the premises are related to the conclusions in speculative matters, so are the ends to the means in practical and appetitive matters. Because even as we know conclusions through their premises, so does the end lead us to the appetite and practice of the means. Accordingly if a person will the end and the means separately, there will be discursion in his will. But there can be no such thing in God, since he is outside all movement. Therefore it follows that God wills himself and other things simultaneously by the one same act of his will. Again, since God always wills himself, if he will himself by one, and other things by another act, It follows that there are two acts of will in him at the same time, but this is impossible since of one simple power there are not at the one time two operations. Further, in every act of the will the thing willed is compared to the will as mover to moved. Wherefore if there be an act of the divine will, by which he wills things other than himself, and which is distinct from the act whereby he wills himself, there will be in him something else that moves the divine will, and this is impossible. Moreover, God's willing is his being as we have proved. But in God there is only one being. Therefore in him there is but one act of the will. Again, it is becoming to God to will in as much as he is intelligent. Wherefore just as by one act he understands himself and other things, inasmuch as his essence is the exemplar of all things, so by one act he wills himself and other things, inasmuch as his goodness is the type of all goodness. -.